Hey dudes, what's going on? It's me, it's your boy, Ben Saint, with another Patron Q&A podcast. It's 10 p.m. on the last day of the month, leap day, February. I don't know if we'll get it out by midnight. Doesn't really matter. Doing this. Just got back from a Bernie rally today. That was kind of fun, kind of interesting. Glad I went. Nothing too unexpected or anything. It was how you'd expect, but it's good. It's good. Sorry if I sound a little bit glum today. I've been watching the results roll in from the South Carolina primary, and they're not great. And I'm trying to tell myself, don't worry about it, Whatever. South Carolina's not that representative. Like, the momentum is obviously doesn't mean that much because Bernie didn't like go on to dominate South Carolina because he won in Nevada, so there's no real reason to think that Biden's gonna go on to dominate in Super Tuesday, even though he's dominated in South Carolina, even though the news keeps saying so. And I was like, oh, North Carolina was looking to South Carolina for their cue, and Florida, oh, this is gonna be big in Florida, in the black constituency. Oh, whatever, fuck it, it's fine. Who gives a shit? So what did I do this month? I did a bunch of slime and punishment. I did a bunch of I think I did like 4, 10, 12, like 16 or 17, 20, less than 20, I think, pages of the slime and punishment pre-finale. If you're listening to this, that means you're a patron, and so you've probably seen them already. I have begun working on the finale, the video. I'm putting together some cool shots. It's a video. It's gonna look neat. I want it to look cool. I have gotten more done in the last like 2 days than I thought. I have actually gotten a bunch of. I've been thinking about, oh, how am I gonna do this? How am I gonna do that? How am I gonna show this? Sorry, I don't want to go too much into it for spoilers, but. I had a couple ideas, like what? How would I portray this? And like the last 2 days, I've been kind of working at it, and I've actually made some headway on that, and it's pretty good. It's pretty exciting. I don't think though that I will be getting it done in the next like 5 days, which is before RadCon. We should talk about RadCon 4. I got 5, I think, days until I gotta get on the plane. I should really check on that. And I won't be able to work on it while I'm gone because I can't like take my computer or anything, which is kind of a bummer, but whatever. I'm RadCon Kickstarter, huge success, made $1 million fucking. Well, made 30, 34 something K. I don't know. Got a lot to work on actually in the next. I haven't done anything. I'm probably should be preparing for the lectures I'm supposed to do. Gotta work on that. I have to draw the reward poster. I have to draw all the 200 plus dollar backers in there in the picture. And I think the picture is supposed to be, I think the consensus is that it's supposed to be like a class graduation photograph, like everyone in the class like array, and there's like I think there's like 42 people, so that's gonna be like almost 50 people. I gotta fucking draw. Oh God. I should be all right. I haven't even started it. It's gonna suck. And yeah, I'm kind of stressed about it. I haven't really wanted to think about it. Been watching the electoral politics, been waiting for Super Tuesday. Now that's right around the corner. And then RadCon's like right after that. Boy, it all really snuck up on me. I wish I had time to finish the Slime and Punishment finale. I would feel so good if I had gotten that like done. But I won't. It'll have to wait. I can't squeeze it in. Did I do anything else interesting this month? I don't remember. I don't remember. Let's just say no. Probably not. Anyway, let's questions. All right. Got a few this time. Let's see. Drip says, question, when was the last time you said trans rights? Never mind, I guess right now. Haha, epic dab, you fucker. Well, shit. You got me. I said it the other day. When did I say it? When did I say it? I don't remember. I said it to someone. I did say it. I dropped it in a conversation. I don't remember with who or what the context was. Then, Drip continues, do you think you deserve the money and audience you have garnered and maintained? Furthermore, do you think with the work you have now that you deserve a larger audience and by extension more money? I didn't read these questions ahead of time, by the way. Wait, one of the other ones I did, but not this one. This question pertains about the quality of your work and, honestly more important, the prolificity of your output. I'm not sure if I should have put my own opinion into my question last month. I forget which opinion you mean, so I'll refrain from commenting, but let me know if you want me to do that. Go ahead, say whatever you want. If it's too mean, I won't read it. But I'm sure it's fine. And they ask a question, is there an upper limit to how long you want these podcasts to be? No, the last two have been about 40 minutes. Probably I'll be similar in the future, but I don't know. They'll just be as long as they need to be. Do I think I deserve the money and audience you've garnered and maintained? Well, hard to say. It might come down to whether you ascribe to the labor theory of value. I think that the work that I have done on my projects and stuff have probably improved the world more than your typical office drone, say. I feel like I have produced more good than probably the average person, the average, like, you know, or I shouldn't say more than the average person. What I mean is I have produced more good with my work than I think probably the average office drone has produced from their job, right? Because I don't think the average job actually contributes to, like, the overall goodness or utility in society. So I guess in that sense I would say I probably deserve a lot more. I think that what I do is probably better than what other people who make a lot more than I do make. From another perspective, if we're looking at it in terms of, oh, anything is only worth what people will pay you, then boring answer. I'm worth whatever people want to give me, and whatever people give me end up giving me is whatever I'm worth. So there's no question of whether I deserve more. I get whatever I deserve. And maybe that's true. And I exist, whether I like it or not, I exist in an ecosystem where that is how people that do what I do are, you know, valued. You know, there are other artists than me who probably are more talented than me, or work harder than me, or work faster than me, or whatever, who have not gotten as much exposure as me. I could probably think of a few. And there's probably a bunch that have been less successful than me. Not that I think I'm not, like, I mean, there's been that have more successful than me. There are probably less talented people. I mean, you know, that's how it is. But how do you, I don't know. I don't know how to say whether I deserve does anyone really deserve anything? Maybe we all just deserve to be obliterated and return to the void from whence we come. I feel like there was one more thought I had about in terms of, like, how much work I've put in, I don't know. Do I feel deserving of what I have gained for the work that I have put in? I don't know. Depends. I kind of feel like the work that I do is not really work. I mean, it kind of is. Sometimes it is. But a lot of the quote-unquote work that I end up doing, you know, drawing shit, for instance, especially something like Slime and Punishment, doesn't really feel like work, so it's not really costing me in terms of, like, my life essence in a way that maybe other jobs do. And from that, maybe I'm not sacrificing as much as someone else, and therefore I deserve less in terms of compensation for it. But in terms of, like, time spent, probably I spend more time doing it than, well, I probably don't spend more than, like, 40 hours a week doing it than, like, an average job. So, I probably spend that much or less. I probably spend, like, that much at maximum. Like, actually, like, actively working on things that I'm making. So, looked at it that way, I probably deserve less than your average office drone. But not, like, way less. I think I make way less than the average office drone. I probably deserve, like, somewhat less, but not as much less as I get in general. I don't know. This is all totally pointless. Circumambulation? A word whose literal meaning is to walk around something, but I'm using it to describe a mode of speaking. Circumambulation? Circumambulation? Okay. That's what I'm doing, and it doesn't matter. Thanks for the question. Fuck you. Bevan says, "Hey, Ben. Yet again, love the podcast, and I'm overjoyed my question was the one to bring you such suffering." Wait. Hold on. Stop everything. Let's see how the polls are doing. Oh. Oh, okay. A little bit. Okay. We're going into like 85% reporting, and the margin is narrowing a bit. It's looking like the margin will, if the trend continues, it might shrink to under a 30-point margin, by which Joseph R. Biden Jr. wins South Carolina, which is disappointing, but it's a heck of a lot better than it was looking 2 hours ago. Holy shit, the first results were coming in. Joseph fucking getting 70%. I shat myself. Not literally, but I should have, just to emphasize what I thought about that. I was thinking it wouldn't be more. Polls said a 20-point lead at the highest. That was the highest poll I saw. I didn't see any polls that said 30%. I was not expecting this result, and I am most displeased. Gotta tell ya. But we got 15% more to go. Maybe it'll close a little more by then. I don't know. Remains to be seen. Anyway, Bevan, thanks for the question. You asked, "Yet again, love the podcast. I'm overjoyed. My question was the one to bring you such suffering. You asked for questions, so I'll leave quite a few. Obviously, only answer as many as you want. First off, I'm sure this story is elsewhere, but how mechanically did you learn to draw? What books, channels did you read, watch? How much did you practice daily? Did you start with a tablet or pen and paper, etc., etc.?" Okay, I'll answer that quickly. How did I learn to draw? Well, I used to doodle. I used to, like, doodle a bunch in notebooks as a kid. Not seriously, just occasionally. Didn't take it very seriously. Took one or two, like, drawing classes because I liked to do it. Didn't, like, really retain much from those. Just kind of did them because I could. When I was, like, young, I used to like to draw Pokemon. And I would open up my fucking Prima guide to Red and Blue or whatever, and just, like, look at the pictures of Pokemon in there and just, like, recreate them on paper. And my mom, who is a special education teacher, or was, she just retired, actually, Lamau, she would copy, she would take my like redrawings of these images and she would copy them and she would give them to her kids to color in. And I thought that was kind of neat. whatever. They weren't good or anything. Don't think that that's, I'm like, oh, I was so talented. No. I was kind of okay-ish at drawing as a kid. Oh, I never really practiced, took it seriously. When I got to like college, like late, like as a senior in college, I started kind of doing it as a hobby sometimes. I just get on fucking MS Paint. I would go on to the 4chan board, TG, traditional games, and I would do little chibi sprite drawings of people's characters just for fun. People would be like, hey, request my character, and people can draw it. A draw fag thread, as they called them. Not my words, I would never say such a thing. Lamau. I would do that. And I've probably shown pictures of some of those that I did back in the day. And then there was, I read Homestuck, and I had been drawing a little bit more, and I wanted to run, you know, I had friends that all played tabletop games, and I wanted to run a Homestuck sort of RP sort of thing that would be half sort of, like, conducted in person over a table. We didn't use, like, I just used coin flips whenever there was, like, a chance event thing. I didn't have, like, a fleshed out number system. But, like, sometimes when the characters were together, we would have you meet up and meet over a table. But sometimes the characters would be split up, you know, because, like, in Homestuck, all the characters, they go to their own planets and they have their own adventures and stuff. Or shit happens. And those times, I would role play as my DM PC character. And I would text them as though we were Pesterlog, and we would have like a text conversation. And then I would draw the results of the, you know, what happened in the aftermath of the conversation. And then I would do it again with someone else. And then we'd do that a bunch of times. And then the characters would meet up again and we would get together and have another session. And anyway, this was called Spurg. And it like Spurb, but funny. I've probably talked about that before. So that was like a big kind of drawing project that I took on, and it took me like a year to finish it. Like even after the campaign was, it took me like almost a year after like the last session to actually get around to drawing the last like however many fucking panels it was. And those are on a Tumblr. I saved those on a Tumblr. The Tumblr is called The Waste of Breath. The waste of space is like the waste of breath .tumblr or however fucking Tumblr URLs work. I did that and it was cool. And I didn't actually get around to finishing it, I think, until I had like, I'd gone to Poland and I had worked for a while and I had worked on it a little bit while I was there. And then I came home and then I finished it. And then I, around that time was when I read Bakuman and I watched Strip Search and I was like, man, being an artist sure sounds like the thing I would like to spend my life doing rather than some other shitty thing that I would hate. And I started getting a little more serious about drawing then. And then I started like, oh, I'll make a webcomic. And I made the website It's Also Ugly and it sucked and I didn't keep up with it at all. I was going to do like 3 strips weekly and I was totally bereft of ideas and it failed. And then I think at some point, started watching My Little Pony, started seeing, watching a guy named Digibro, and I was like, hey, this guy, any fucking idiot could do this, even me. And I talked to Nate about it, my brother, I'm sure you know, and we were like, dude, we talk about My Little Pony all the time. Every time there's a new episode, we talk about it. Let's fucking make a YouTube channel. Let's just record our conversation. Let's turn our hobby, this thing we do into content. And I was like, yeah, I'll draw some OCs. And then I did. And that was T-Bat. And then it was off to the races. I think that's enough history. And then I decided to draw the vapors, I guess, is the next step in that, Lamau. Later. Have you read Drawing on the Right Side of the Brain? And if so, as someone who presumably knows science stuff, how did you feel about it? Drawing on the Right. I have definitely I feel like I had this book or had to read this book maybe in like school in art class, and I don't, to be honest, I don't remember anything about what it said. So if I learned anything from it, I don't remember it. But I feel like I read this book, or maybe was asked to read it, and maybe ended up reading some of it in an art class in high school. So that's my answer. I think I've read some of it, and maybe it helped. I genuinely don't remember. Oh, what books, channels did you read watch? Anything, Loomis, Andrew, I think it's Andrew Loomis. Loomis is the best. Figure Drawing for All It's Worth, and other ones. Loomis is really good. Read at least one of his books. I promise it's worth it. If you want to draw. How much, what channels did you read? There was a channel called Psychra. There were a couple. I used to watch, when I was like first thinking about, boy, I should get serious about drawing, I used to watch a lot of like drawing tutorials, not even so much to like learn so much as like to watch someone do it and feel like, yeah, I could do that. It was almost more of like a emotional inspiration thing than like a, I mean, I am sure I did learn some tips here and there, but I probably should have been. I think I would have gotten more out of actually drawing than I did out of, than I would out of watching all those tutorials. I did get some out. It is good to watch other people do it, but more often than not, I think I was just watching them as sort of a vicarious, to sort of vicariously feel as though I had drawn something. I would often find myself thinking like, I just watched like Sykra draw a figure, and it's like, oh, I totally understand it. Like, I totally understand how he did that, and I could do it. But then I would think about like, no, like I didn't do it, and I'm actually, I don't know how, and like I wouldn't even try. I just, I'd be like, oh well, I just watched the video, but I don't have time to actually draw anything. But I would feel as though I did. But of course, actually, I didn't. You have to actually draw to learn stuff sometimes. How much practice daily did you start with it? For a while, I was drawing every day. I don't know. It's kind of, I go through periods where I will draw every day for like a while. I don't remember what I was drawing. Like what? I would just doodle like faces. I was working on, I don't, the thing that gets me to draw the most is to have like a project that I'm working on. I drew a bunch for like when I was making The White Lion, and when I was working the comic that's on my website. I made that around the same time as I made It's Also Ugly. And when I was making the It's Also Ugly strips, that kept me drawing until I gave up on the project. And then, when I was working on TBAP, like having like, oh, okay, I need to make these faces. Like that's what's gonna, that's what kept me motivated. I don't think if I had never like had like a goal in mind, like okay, I'm gonna make this so that I can, I'm gonna draw this so that I can use it in this project. I cannot make myself care about like just doing like a practice drawing, just like just for practice. Like that's, ugh. I can't do. I don't think I could. No. No. It wouldn't work for me. It's just so boring. So God, what was the question? So I guess when I really get into a project, I can work for like, I can, I feel like there must have been a period where, I guess I'll say this. There have been times when I have drawn every day, but it has mostly been in the context of like when I've had a goal that I've been working on or a project that I've been working on. Those periods do not tend to last very long when I'm just like thinking like I should practice drawing. which I've just given up on. I don't ever think like, I think I'll practice drawing today. No, I'm just, it's all only like, I think I'll work on Slime and Punishment today, or I think I'll do whatever, you know. It's the only context in which I draw at all, almost. It's when I have a specific thing. Is that good? I don't know, but it's what I do. Building onto this episode, do you feel your distaste for talking about yourself and your work has inhibited your growth at all? Probably in terms of like marketing myself and like in making connections. Yeah, I think that the smart thing to do would probably be to shamelessly, I think Digi just made a video not that long ago where he says like you be shameless, or no, that's not the word he used, or like relentless or incessant, be incessant, I think. I don't even remember what fucking, I just remember recently, I just happened to watch one of his videos for some reason, and he said like, be incessant about talking about what you're working on. And I don't do that because I find it kind of embarrassing. And that probably inhibits my outreach, because probably the thing to do is to be reaching out to other artists all the time, talking constantly about what I'm working on, telling everyone, hey, you draw this? Oh, I really love your work. Here, I also draw, and hey, I drew you some fan fiction, maybe, or I drew you some fan art. You know, maybe we could be art friends. Maybe we could be professional collaborators. You know, da, da, da. I feel like that's how you're supposed to do it. And I don't really engage much in that because it is draining and embarrassing. And it's probably to my detriment. You've recently mentioned more date stories. Have you intentionally been putting yourself out there more? And if so, was there any specific motivation? Kinda. I have a vague sense that I probably should be, quote, putting myself out there. And then, I don't know, I just happened to stumble upon this girl who I've mentioned who wanted to go on dates with me for some reason. And she was kind of funny. Honestly, probably trouble and would have been a hassle. And I lost my phone and I lost her number and I might be able to recover the number. I don't know if I want to call her again because she seemed like a bit of a problem, and maybe I don't mind that I don't have her number anymore. I don't know. I still have, is that weird? I feel like that's weird. Like, I feel like maybe I should be like, I feel like maybe I should be worried about it. Or, like, stressing, like, boy, I gotta, like, get a girlfriend. Boy, I gotta, like, get married soon or something. And I don't feel like that at all. And that's, that too. Just like my drawing practices, my dating practices, just, they are what they are. And I don't know if they're good or bad, but there it is. Have you... In light of the hackings recently, have you made any security changes? Well, I mean, I updated all my passwords on everything. Other than that, no. It wasn't like, I didn't do anything to get hacked, so I just re-changed my passwords, and I think everything else is fine. Have you been volunteering? Wait, no. God, there's so many questions. Do you think you will ever do another episodic review series like Pooh? Only if there was a show that I was, like, really hype about and really wanted to talk about and, like, really also thought it would be worth doing so in, like, a video format. As I've said before, Pooh ended up being, from a practical returns perspective, kind of a waste of effort. Mind leaking what weird shit Chris Chan wanted for Slime and Punishment that you're ignoring? You know, that's a great... God, that might balloon the length of this episode, but you know what? Fuck it. Yeah, sure. Here we go. I'll leak it. I don't give a fuck. I won't comment on it. I will just say what Chris said. I'm scrolling back through the... Holy fuck. I'm trying to remember... Okay, I'll just read it. I don't think there's any like sensitive information in here. And I don't know what to think about it. Honestly, I got a slurry of these messages at some point. This was months ago. What? No, I scrolled too far back in the timeline. Oh my god, this was months ago. What the fuck have I been doing? Okay. Anyway, here's what she said. Quote, "Also, I have meditated for another look into the future. I present what ha-" Sorry, I would like do a voice, but I don't think I can keep it up. So, here it is. "I present what happens when Beta Phantom..." I'm going to preserve typos because they're funny. What happens with Beta Phantom Horn and Virginia up to the extent from which you should be able to fill in the blanks yourself. This is all I can provide to your view. There, in Lacacan, Arizona, Dimension C197, Beta PH wandered the streets of New Milwaukee." She calls it New Milwaukee. "He found that everyone who remained after the 24-hour soda rains had all no longer had any slime in them, and confirmed that there was hardly any at all left in the Alpha timeline. And for local currency, everyone had reverted to U.S. American dollars and cents. And Beta Phantom Horn looked up the Illuminati office, which still stood and functions." I believe Chris thinks that Slime Corp is the Illuminati. "The group within was expecting this Phantom Horn to pay them a visit. On the other topic, during the soda rain, C-197's cop killer, Ben Saint's other OC, of worst intentions, he was encountered in the sewers, and he was beheaded. His severed head remained alive with the slime in it. The reserve would last him for months to years. Meanwhile, his body was exposed to the soda water, and it did not make it at all. The head was put into a jar and under strictest military guard in Arizona's facility. Using magics, the Illuminati there whisked the jarred head away and into their location. Now, seeing the head, Beta Phantom Horn had recognized Cop Killer to be Ben Saint's other OC, opposed to himself. The Illuminati informed BPH, Beta Phantom Horn, that his slimoid, and the other that they had attempted to seek employment and opportunities, yet failed, is still alive and free, attempting to find his own path." Wait, what? So, Beta Phantom Horn, they informed Beta Phantom Horn that his slimoid and the other that had attempted to seek employment and... Is she talking about Uwupity and Alpha Virginia? I don't know. "All it would take is that slimoid and Virginia combined to make a new body for Cop Killer that would last him beyond a lifetime into immortality, never needing any slime for himself to survive ever again. BPH was reluctant, but he considers for a while what to do with Virginia. The Illuminati told him he can take his time to think about it, but he must not leave Arizona or C-197. In the likely event Cop Killer of C-197 is restored, he would want to rally his troops, but everyone had moved on. And yes, he will be immortal, as being composed of the regenerating slime, bullets would pass through him, and if he loses a limb, he can easily reattach it. Even his head and body remain alive, even separated, and all it would take is for the body to put the head back on. There would no longer be any trips to the sewers, as he had known it, because his lost soul stayed forever trapped within what is left of his brain. He can't regenerate limbs or a new head or body, but this means he kills someone else, they can't come back in a revive. He will remain aware of that rule. Eventually, though, since part of his reformed body is from an alt-timeline slimoid, there is the paradoxical likelihood that the body would not last as long as forever, or even a few months or so. and in that moment, he'd be literally half a physical individual from the waist upward. And that was in November, and then in December, she said, "Hey Ben, just to let you know, spoiler alert, the battle between Beta Timeline Chris Chan Sonichu and OP Alpha Cop Killer stays in Arizona as she goes to him." This was the slurry of new messages that I was like, I can't fucking do anything with this. I can't deal with this anymore. Her motivation was that she got hit by the slime. Chris Chan Sonichu did, got it. Her motivation was that she got hit by a slime, and she realized its effects. It slowly was getting to her brain, but she remained conscious and self-aware as before. She wanted to cure herself and everyone else, so she started the soda rains there and cranked up the time on it. Okay. So this is... I guess... I'm rethinking this now. I guess, is this saying that actually it was Beta Timeline? It was Beta Timeline slime infected Chris Chan Sonichu who made the rain? I don't know. She wanted to cure herself and everyone else, so she started the soda rains there and cranked up the time on. Are we in the Alpha Timeline or the... God, I hope this is interesting. I hope this isn't boring. I'm sorry. Going through this is... This, like, stresses me out, honestly. Like, having to keep all of Chris's, like, weird headcanon. Like, I couldn't... I just ignored it because I just want to finish the fucking story. She wanted to cure herself and everyone else. She started the soda rains there and cranked up the time on it. After singing in the rain for herself, she found that the slime was not leaving her, and this was only affecting her, period. Gah, what the freak? And with her share of dimension-traveling ability, she jumped into the Alpha Timeline to seek out Cop Killer. As she laid eyes on him, she started getting hungry for slime, and he was still rich with it in his body. She was the one who beheaded him. She sucked the slime out of his body before leaving it out in the rain. Then she portals back to Alpha Timeline. She had laid low, because she knew everyone wanted her slime, but she was not going to give it up. She had enough to last her a very long time. But it turned out, it only lasted for weeks, and she was beginning to fade along with the Beta Timeline. Then she saw CK getting OP revived as he just did? OP. OP. Who is OP? OP Alpha Cop Killer. OP is Alpha Cop Killer, I think. She saw CK getting OP revived as he just did. So after he came back in his present blobulous form, her word, she knew to hop in to take his slime. Shoot. Obviously, he wasn't going to give it up either. So the two of them fought in Lakakam, in the Alpha Timeline. On her last legs and bolts, she pulls her haymaker with the chaos control and obliterates him by pushing his head out of the big blob. She sucked the blob down until it was just her. She started to feel better then. In a bit of irony, the local army comes in with a fire truck and the soda water mixture, and blasts both Beta Chris Chan and CK with the water. She had CK held in her hand by the hair before they blasted her. And in the paradox effect, the two of them simply do melt away. And then, from the Beta Timeline, Cop Killer, Rowdy Fucker, and the remainder of the Beta Timeline enter the Alpha Timeline. That's all I have for now. Thank you, Ben. Wait, oh god, there's more. Oh god, Jesus, fuck. More details came in. I had a blood pressure spike just now, literally, over what transpired with the Beta Timeline Chris Chan Sonichu. Brain burn. Ow! Anyway, there was a silver lining in the event. The Beta Chris Chan Sonichu has a full-on reincarnation ability, as she was born in the Beta Timeline as a Sony, to rapid grow back into her present age/level, and the Beta Timeline is restored by the effect. Even the slime returned in the Beta Timeline, not in the Alpha Timeline at all, however. Damn! Brain burn for a reincarnation. It is worth it. Killer Sonichu was learning the lesson of how awful and costly the slime really was, right before the reincarnation in the Beta timeline happened. I do see how this came about, and the irony of it all. Upon being asked to join the Endless War, and the slime upon myself being asked to join the Endless War, and the slime warfare, the Beta timeline string of similar effects came into effect, including the Chris-Chan there getting slimed and becoming corrupted. Asking me to join the Endless War caused this fated event in the Beta timeline to happen. Meanwhile, as also fated, the Alpha timeline slime problem was resolved, by which I mean the slime was still extinct in the Alpha timeline. And in this, I am now woke to the reincarnation and regeneration aspects, or however better termed that can be. This was a real psychic and deity-level brain burner, and yet I survived it. That is all for now. I'm going to try to rest a bit more on this. Later. My mistake. This was 10 minutes later. My mistake. Total rebirth, not reincarnation. But she still kept all of her memories and personality intact. Anyway, Beta timeline is restored. Respond. So, there you have it. I hope that clears up everything you might have wanted to know about everything. I'll let you meditate on that and draw from it what you will. Let me know in the comments what you think about any of that shit. It was a lot for me to deal with, so I just didn't. Lamau. Have you been volunteering for Bernie at all in this election? And if so, do you prefer phone banking or canvassing generally? I haven't done any personal canvassing. I have only done phone banking. I find phone banking to be not particularly unpleasant. I have so far made about 200 calls, first to New Hampshire and before the primary, and then this week I spent 4 hours one day or thereabouts. I made another 100-plus calls to South Carolina. And speaking of South Carolina, let's check in on that. Let's see how that's going. Let's see what's up. Yep. Looks like we are about 30. Looks like we're just maybe slightly under a 30-point lead. A result that I would, that I am not sure if it is, catastrophizing to call it disastrous, but I might be tempted to if I were in the right headspace. But who knows? I'm sure everything's fine. Do you think in terms of the time to knowledge ratio, reading primary and political philosophy sources is worth it? To me personally, no. I have only suffered. I have gained nothing. What books have you read? Mostly the books I've read lately have been audiobooks that I have read through Munchie's Audible subscription. So, you know, Debt. I read a couple months ago, I think I read Alex de Tocqueville's was it called Democracy in America? Was that the Tocqueville book? Whatever his famous book was. It was like 40 hours long. I read another David Graeber called, I keep forgetting, it's also called like Democracy, A Something in Crisis. That one was good. Not as good as Debt, The First 5,000 Years. I'm gonna read Bullshit Jobs, another Graeber. I started to read, Munchie recommended me a history of the city-state of Boston, I think it was called. I got like 6 hours into it, and I was really bored. I didn't like it. He said it picked up later, but I gave up on it, and I don't know if I'll pick it up again. Do you detect a level in your understanding when you physically read versus when you listen to books? I pick up information better. I'm more likely to sort of zone out if I'm listening than if I am reading. You can zone out when you're reading. Like, you'll just find yourself at the end of a page and you don't remember what any of it said. That does happen, but it happens less it's harder for that to happen when I'm actively reading. It's easy to zone out when you're listening to an audiobook. Actually, I listened to Munchie also recommended a biography of Napoleon, and while I did listen to all of it, I do think that I zoned out for significant chunks of it. Still, it was pretty funny. It was pretty funny. How many minutes do you intend for this podcast to go with Ben generally speaking? Another question about that. I don't know, as long as I want it to. I see that I'm already cracking 40 minutes. So maybe I will go a full hour this time, or maybe more. I don't know. Sorry for that enormous diversion about the Chris Chan stuff, but I think it's funny. How do you feel about the wholesomeness meme culture that has been developing in the past few years? I don't know. I guess I like it. No, I guess I don't like it. I don't like when it's disingenuous. I don't like its fixation on animals. I don't like animals. I don't like it when people post their animals. That part of it in particular, I dislike specifically. When it's like, oh, a wholesome post, here's a cute cat. No, thanks. I guess being wholesome is fine. It's better. I think it's better to be wholesome than to be mean. I like wholesomeness better than, like, you know, what we might consider quote-unquote edginess. If I had to pick one, I would probably go wholesome. Is this enough questions? Too many? I suppose I will see. It was a lot, but I don't care. I will fucking go do it again next time. I dare you. Love your work. Keep it up. Slime and Punishment is my favorite thing to come out of RCK. Wow. You're the first person to tell me that. I wonder if other people feel that way, but that's really nice to hear. Damn. Cool. Sick. Thank you. I can't wait for its inevitably incredible conclusion. The finale's shaping up. I wish I could get it done before RadCon. I probably won't, but I don't think it's going to take, like, a whole lot longer after RadCon is done. Drip. What is the another question from Drip. Ugh, I know, right? What is the genesis for The Vapors? Was it, like, this abstract concept of a comic about desperately shitty people first, or were Vincent and Magda characters you had in your own head, etc.? Was a narrative character arc thought about, or is it these kinds of... Is it kind of about these characters being stagnant? Yeah, there's no, it's about them being stagnant. There is no, like, I never imagined, like, oh, like, one day I'll get to the point where, like, they graduate or whatever, or, like, they have to move to France and deal with, like, they have culture shock and they, like, acclimate and they learn some valuable lessons about not being racist against the French people. No. Anyway. What was the genesis of them? I don't know. Like, I had read Watamote, and I was like, hey, this is funny. I don't feel like this is a full answer. The closest thing might be that I just thought, like, hey, Watamote is just a comic about someone being shitty, and it's kind of funny. I could just do that. That seems too simple. I feel like there was more to it than that. But what? What else could there be? I don't know. I mean, I had been out of college for a couple years at the time, and I thought about, I guess maybe I was reflecting on, like, how awkward I used to be. I was like, that's kind of embarrassing. I feel pretty strongly about that, you know, in a negative way. Gotta draw on something. Gotta make something. I don't know. Sometimes I ask myself, like, why did I make this? Like, what? And I don't know. I guess, boy, what a disappointing answer. Not for me as well. I thought for a moment that trying to answer this might give me some kind of insight into something, but no, No luck. I never like. I didn't like these weren't like characters that I had like kicking around in my head that I thought of for some other reason. I came up with them just completely for the sake of being in their own story. I guess maybe my thought process was like, okay, so I want to draw comics. I want to be an artist. I have to just start. That's the only way you do it. You don't get there by just, you know, practicing and thinking like, oh, one day I'll be good enough and then I can make my masterpiece. No, you just start. Okay. So I'll write a story. But gotta keep it real, gotta keep the stakes low, gotta keep the implications low, gotta keep it like really simple. Gotta keep it like contained to like very few elements. Cannot let the story spiral out of control. Like probably like a science fiction or a fantasy thing would probably spiral out of control with like things, you know, something like the scope of something like that. Can't do it. What about just like a down to earth character, little fucking character study just about some kids being shitty, just about some goofy people being weird. Okay. That's as low. That's as small a story as I can possibly think of. And I guess probably I thought of it from there. Like, okay, so that's the kind of story I'm going to make because it is the most doable, I think. So what should it be? And then I guess maybe I thought about, I mean, you know, a lot of my fucking adult life at that point had been in college. So I relatively knew. I knew as much about that as I knew about anything. So I was like, why not? Okay. I feel like maybe I have elucidated something there. I've touched on something a little bit vital or pertinent. Was a narrative character I thought of about, how did I think of the character arc, or how did I think of the arc, how did I think of the story, I had the characters in mind, and they're basically just me. Vincent is basically just Phantom Horn. They're the same person. Basically, they have almost the same personality. Kinda. Phantom's a little, no, they're basically the same. And Magda, I don't know. I don't really have another character that I can say, oh, she's the same as this, but she's a lot like me in some ways. And I was like, okay, well, here's these two characters. They're both kind of like me, but they're both different from each other. That's, there you go. I guess that's a dynamic. And then I think the way I thought of the story would just be like, what would be like the most embarrassing thing they could do? What's a thing that like they would do that I would be like, ugh. Yuck, yikes, cringe. Like, what makes me feel the most that way? Okay, I'll do that. I don't know. And yes, it is about them being stagnant. The point is not for them to like learn anything. It's just for them to do shit. And you get to watch, and maybe it's interesting. I don't know. Okay. Coming up on an hour here. One question by Morpho Medic. Hey, Ben, loving these so far. Thank you. Just wanted to know what your process for planning a story. I kind of just talked about this. I'm in the middle of trying to write a book, but I've been stuck in the planning stage for months now. Every time I feel like I figured it out, something else comes to mind that makes me readjust everything. Hopefully hearing how you do will help me about it. Okay, I did read this question before I started, and I actually had an answer prepared, and only now that I get around back to it, I realize that basically the answer to the last question kind of answers this one. But the answer I had pre-prepared was that I had recently found a video called... I pulled it up so I wouldn't forget. The video was... Well, there were two. They were by a YouTuber called Jake Parker. He's like an art advice guy. The first one was called The World Building Trap, and the second was called The Minimum Viable Story. And I don't know why I happened upon these. I think I just did. I don't know. I don't usually watch like art advice videos anymore. But I watched these for some reason, and I basically, what they are describing is kind of my approach to the vapors, which was, what is the smallest story I can tell that I think I can feasibly do, and but that like still is a comic. It's like, hey, I made this, it's a comic, it's done, it's a thing that I made, it's a product. In the world building trap, he talks about like you can get stuck, you know, thinking about your world, thinking through further implications. Oh, okay, well, I'll, like, oh, what if it was like this? What if the world was like this? And you build up, and he describes it as like you're making plans to build a cathedral, but like you have plans for a cathedral, but all you're actually doing is you have these ideas, but they're not. You're not putting them together into a story, so they're basically just stones. They're just raw stones that you're just putting them in a pile, right? And your plan is to carve them into a cathedral, but unless you actually start putting them together, you'll never get there. So you gotta build a little hut first. And then the second video is the minimum viable story, which is the storytelling equivalent of minimum viable product, which is what's the most basic thing I can do to get it done and have a thing, right? And I feel like it's, if you're interested, check the videos out. They're good. I mostly came away from them thinking like, that was a pretty good explanation of a concept that I feel like I have already internalized and that has informed a lot of my projects. That's the mindset that the vapors came out of. Same for TBAP. I was like, well, I can draw a couple faces. You know, I can draw a couple pony faces talking. I can figure out how to make Vegas. Like, that's not too big of an ask. Sure, I can make a pony. Well, you know, because like when TBAP started, it wasn't even that. It was just a still image with us talking. And then we added a little bit of animation. And then I made like whole new faces for it. And then we started adding like intro skits at the beginning and end. And that's an example of like, okay, minimum viable product is just the podcast on a still image. And then you build on it. Build the cathedral. Yes, the mighty monument to my glory that is TBAP. St. Ben's Cathedral, if you will. It all comes full circle. Okay, shit. So, yeah. That's my advice. Is the same advice that this video talks about. Minimum viable story. If you're getting, you're saying you're getting distracted by, what did you say? Something else comes to mind that makes me readjust everything. If you find that keeps happening, maybe you don't have to throw out the ideas that you have, but maybe you need to narrow your focus to something very specific and be like, okay, well, I want to write a story. Like, a book is really fucking long, right? Maybe, I don't know if you've done this already. Maybe you have. But if you haven't, maybe like, okay, well, I keep coming up with new shit that distracts me as I'm trying to write this book. Maybe what I need to do then is like narrow my focus down to a very specific idea that I've had and be like, okay, I'm going to write a short story about that. And, you know, maybe do a few of those. Maybe do one of those. And like, if it's like, okay, this is, try that a few times. And then, you know, later on, maybe you can, maybe you could put those together. They could be like an anthology. Or you could even re-edit them and like string them together as parts of what might later become a full novel. I'm sure that writers do that kind of shit. Or if not, just edit together, just basically, you can always just like cannibalize your own ideas and things you've written in the past and like put them into a later thing. You know, work is never wasted, right? Well, that's not true. Well, work is never wasted because it's all practice. But like they say in the minimum viable product theory, what you need is a product. So if your goal is to get a product out, it is more wasteful. Maybe it's never 100% wasteful, but it's more wasteful for you to be working and reworking and reworking and rethinking and coming up with new ideas about a thing that never gets done. The way that you minimize waste of the work you're doing is by maximizing the rate at which you can, like, cut it off and be like, I'm done. This thing is done. I made this thing, right? Like, say, I guess it would be like, okay, say you want to write a book, or you want to write stories generally, whether that's a book or whatever. If you decide, like, okay, I'm going to work for a year, right? Maybe you're like, I'm going to write for a year. Now, there's two ways that that could end. If your goal is, I'm going to spend a year writing, and whatever is done at the end, that's my book. Well, what if you spend that year, and at the end, you've got a book, and it's not done. You're like, oh shit, I spent the year, and this isn't ready. I'm not finished. The year's over, and I have nothing. But if you instead are like, okay, in this year, I'm going to spend six two-month periods, and each time, I'm going to write. I don't know if this is metaphors work. Let's follow through to the end and see what happens. Maybe, and then, you know, 2 months in, you're like, okay, maybe you fail the first one, but you're like, okay, well, fuck it. I'll spend the next 2 months, like, because my goal was smaller, right? I had, like, a more attainable goal, and so now I can spend, basically, like, more individual points at which to call it done and be like, okay, done, next thing, okay, done, next thing. Like, the more often you do that, the more times you can basically recoup your time investment, right? Because saying, like, done, this thing's finished, on to the next thing, that's the moment at which you're like, okay, this thing that I have put energy into, that has become a product. That is a done thing that I have made, right? That's your return on investment for the effort you put into it. And the smaller discrete chunks that you work on creating, you know, like short stories instead of a full novel, the smaller the individual items are, the more times, like, it's a safer bet, right? It's a safer bet that you can invest the time, get it done, have it done, right? If you invest less time and fail, you've lost less, right? It's a more surefire way. It's lower risk, lower, I mean, may arguably lower reward, but, like, boy, it sure would be disastrous if you spent a whole year writing a book and at the end you didn't finish it, or it sucked, right? If you spend a month writing a short story, that's, you can live with that a little easier. Fail faster, right? Other people have said this. There's a extra, not extra credits. What's that fucking YouTube channel about video games that made that bad video about how players should be punished for playing Nazis in competitive first-person shooters? They made a video called Fail Faster. I don't think they thought of the concept, but it's basically that, right? Keep work on something. Narrow your focus to something that is doable, and then you can do it, get it done. You can guarantee that it's done, and then having been done, you can build on it the next one. Okay, I feel like I must have said enough about this. My point must be abundantly clear, because I've gone on about it for plenty long. Whew, okay. We're over an hour. Hey, holy shit. Very long. Let's see how the fucking primaries are doing. What's going on? What's going on with the primaries? Yeah, it's about the same. Uh, 96% reporting. Oh, hey, only. It's down to a 28.7% lead. okay. You know what? I'll fucking take it, all right? I'll fucking take it. Thanks. Thanks, South Carolinians. Fuckers. All right, anyway. Sorry to be a downer about democracy. I hope I've said some things that were interesting. I hope I didn't bore you too much on this third episode of my Ben Saint, patreon.com/BenSaint patron Q&A. Thanks for being a patron. Thanks for supporting me. Hope you stick around. Ask me more shit in the comments on this thing. If at the end of next month you want to hear me go off on some rambles like I just did, and hopefully next month I'll be feeling better. I won't be sweating this whole Joe Biden situation as much. My head will really be in the game. RadCon will be behind me, and hopefully that will be a good thing. Hopefully I can be like, oh, here's all the stuff I did. I got all this done. I accomplished all this. Let's fingers crossed. Yeah, man. Sick. All right, cool. Dab. Hey, good news. Pete Buttigieg, fucked. Elizabeth Warren, fucked. Amy Klobuchar, fucked. Those guys are fucking done, man. Ooh, that feels good. Feels good to see them hurt. Whatever. Well, yeah, it's fine. Okay, enough. Enough. No more. Thanks for listening. Ask me a question in the comment. See you next time on patreon.com/BenSaint. I shouldn't be too loud. It's late. People trying to sleep, Ben. Fuck's sake.